Chapter 12 Weekend Warriors. When a storm system is about to move through town, you can usually tell it's coming. The wind picks up and the ocean starts churning. A storm came to town that long President's Day weekend, but it didn't come by way of land or sea. It came by foot. It began with Salerno's. Patrons sat there at lunchtime on Saturday, hoping against hope that their pizza might have a little less garlic and salt. When someone found something crunchy underneath the cheese, the story, which rumbled through town like thunder, hit me after who knows how many years. Cheryl told me about it. It wasn't exactly a sausage in the pizza, she said, but you can say it was full of protein. It was, in fact, a cockroach, industrial-sized. As the story goes, Salerno then opened his storeroom to find everything from the flour to the Parmesan cheese infested with hundreds upon hundreds of roaches. It was too late to stop some of them from being baked into pizza and lasagna. Although I can't be sure, I had a sneaking suspicion that one or more of his various part-time pizza makers wore a TSC hat. I know tales get exaggerated in the telling, but I believe the part about old man Salerno bursting into tears and swearing that he'd never open his doors again. Victim number two, Mrs. Hilda McBroom. More commonly known, even to our parents, as Broom Hilda, the witch. Widowed since before I was born, it seemed her one remaining goal in life was to keep kids from getting anywhere near her beautiful rose garden. In the spring and summer, that garden was beautiful indeed. Her yard was full of trellises that sprouted roses in every color of the spectrum. She had recently cut them back in preparation for the growing season, but on this particular Sunday, she woke to find that her rose bushes had been cut back a little further, like all the way to the roots. Every single rose bush had been beheaded like Marie Antoinette, never again to sprout another rose. Rumor was that she just stood outside in the middle of the thorny debris for an hour, until a neighbor let her back into her house. Garson Underwood, a computer programmer who seemed to have been targeted for no other reason than the fact that he was amazingly fat. Me, I never had a problem with fat people unless they sat next to me on an airplane, but then, it's not their fault that airplane seats are so small, and it's not Garson's fault that his own body decided to be his enemy, refusing to burn off his fat. I knew he tried to slim down, because I often saw him running anyway, desperately. Garson emerged from his house that Sunday morning to find his car had been spammed. I mean, completely. There had had to have been a dozen industrial-sized cans of Spam spread over every inch of his brand new caddy. But that wasn't the only icing on the cake. After he cleaned off the Spam and he tried to start the engine, it kept coughing and dying. What he didn't know was that the gas tank had been filled to the brim with molten Ben and Jerry's Monkey Chunky ice cream. The radiator was loaded with Mountain Dew, and several pounds of butter had been spread over the engine block. After several attempts to start the engine, the spark plugs set the butter on fire, and the car was soon engulfed in flames. And Mr. Underwood could do nothing but watch from the sidewalk as his new Cadillac
Victim number
went
four,
up in flames. Miss Regina Pfeiffer, children's librarian at our public library. She had become a friend of mine a few years back when she taught me, much to my surprise, that there were tons of books I'd actually enjoy, even ones by dead writers. The attack on her began with a broken window in the library on Saturday night. In the morning, the police found that all the books were gone from the kids' section. The only one left, right in the middle shelf, was The Chocolate War, which made a sickeningly perfect sense since the rest of the library was doused in Hershey's syrup. As for the other books, they came washing up on the beach that day,
more tales
jellyfish
drifted in
all weekend long. And what made it more frightening was that these stories all made the rounds by Sunday afternoon, which meant the culprits were actually bragging about what they had done. They couldn't wait for the stories to work their way down the grapevine. Cheryl and I tried to track down the originators of the stories, knowing that the first person to tell the tale was probably involved in the crime. But by now, everyone was suspect. Everyone except the original members of the Shadow Club. We had gathered at Cheryl's house, and each member of the club was assigned the task of tracking down the person who had given them their TSC hat. "What do we do when we find them?" OP asked. Jason
Make a
chuckled
citizen's
nervously.
arrest?
You want me to try and arrest Airless Booth? He's not called the pile driver for nothing. Even the football team's afraid of him. Besides, it's not like we have any proof, Abby said. All we need is one confession, I told them. Yeah, right, said Randall. They're just going to swing open their door and spill their guts to us. Maybe so. Somebody's got to be feeling guilty. Don't be so sure, said Darren. The more kids involved, the less guilty each one feels. We all know about that, don't we? Yes, we did know. And it made the situation that much graver. They left, leaving Cheryl and me alone. Do you remember who else was wearing those hats? Cheryl asked. I shook my head. I remembered the hats, but not a single face beneath them. I'd better just start with Jody. Do you know where she lives?
Cheryl paused for a second.
No, but I can find out. Maybe we should ask Tyson. He'll know. I don't like the idea of bringing this up to Tyson. He'll think I'm accusing him. What if he's involved? No. He's not violent like that. You don't call setting fires violent? Yeah, but it was always a reaction to something someone else had done to him. It's like he's allergic to abuse from other kids and has a violent reaction to it. He wouldn't just go out and trash people's lives. But his girlfriend would. So did mine. It came up before I had the chance to hold back. Cheryl reeled as if I had slugged her in the face. I'm sorry I said that. No, she said.
The next few
never
moments
be sorry
were
for telling
awkward and uncertain. Cheryl and I had never discussed Austin's broken ankle and the rocks that she spread out in the field. Although she made a full confession, I was the one who took the brunt of the blame. I didn't realize how much I resented that until now. I'm sorry about what happened to Austin, she said. I still can't believe I could do something so horrible. I took her hand and gently squeezed it.
You're not doing anything horrible now.
But there are others who are.
She nodded. Then she slipped her hand out from mine, and we got back to work.
Did you hear about what happened down at the Gazlinplex? Jody asked me when she answered the door not half an hour later. The Gazlinplex was our local movie theater.
It claimed the capacity to show more movies than were actually in release on any given day.
But they just showed us 4 or 5 movies on a gazillion different screens.
When they opened today, she continued, they found cows in the projection rooms chewing up the film and smashing all the equipment.
Weird,
well,
huh?
Maybe not so weird. Considering the fact that the owner of the Gazlinplex was hated by kids because he ejected anyone who got caught trying to theater surf, and was fond of calling people waiting in line cattle.
Tell me, Jody, how could you know what happened when the movie theater only opened 15 minutes ago?
Well, I just heard. I paced a little bit on her porch, a bit unnerved by how calm she was.
So why are you here? She asked.
It's not like you can ask me in the movies now, she giggled. Not unless there's Steer Wars.
I turned to her sharply.
I want names, I demanded. I want to know who it is, every last one of them, and how many there are. She twisted her lip in a disgusted snarl. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure you don't. You're just as innocent as can be.
You're acting too weird, Jared. The honesty in her expression was the most unnerving thing of all. How could she lie and lie and still not show it in her eyes? As for me, I couldn't imagine what my eyes must have been like by now.
You're involved and we both know it.
I'm not involved in anything. I was at a sleepover with my friends last night.
Swear it, I blurted.
I swear. Still not good enough. Okay, I swear in my grandmother's grave. Not good enough.
Do you want me to put my hand on the Bible?
Yes, I said. Yes, I do.
And she said without any hesitation.
Fine, I'll go get one. But just before she went inside, she thought for a moment and said, just because there's some people in town who are finally getting what they deserve, that doesn't mean me or any of my friends are involved. Then she added, nobody wanted to see you expelled, Jared. But when you think about it, isn't it more likely that you and your friends did it?
That left me speechless.
But the hats. They're just hats, she said, struggling the whole thing off.
She went inside.
What does a hat
prove? Before I left, she came
then
back.
Then she smiled at me.
Because I knew
I'll
no matter what
Bible.
She had done, she would put her hand on that Bible, look me in the eye, and swear. I went home after that. My mind was trying to roll into self-preservation mode by now, trying to convince me of all the things I'd rather be doing. Watching videos, playing computer games, net surfing. I'd even be happy to do homework now. But when I got home, I couldn't bring myself to do much of anything at all. Tyson was gone, my parents were out, and I find myself staring at the blinking light on the answering machine. I didn't want to hear any more bad news, so I just sat there, tossing the seashell of mine up and down, putting it to my ear, wishing I could hear a voice in there that would magically solve all my problems. Finally, I went to the answering machine and hit the button. "Hi, Jared. This is Darren." I took a deep breath. Of all the ex-members of the Shadow Club, I figured Darren would be the least likely to call me. His voice sounded shaky. Scared. I hit the pause button, took a few deep breaths, and then let the message continue. "You gotta get down here," he said. "It's Mr. Green. See, I live on this block and, well, just get down here." And then the message ended. I left the house and made the long run alone to find out what had happened to Mr. Green.